There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
NFL Live on the air. This news breaking earlier today. The NFL reinstating Browns defensive end Myles Garrett effective immediately. Garrett met with NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell on Monday regarding his indefinite suspension stemming from his part in a late-game brawl between the Browns and Steelers last season. First-year Browns general manager Andrew Berry offered these words on Garrett's reinstatement today, quote, "We welcome Myles back to our organization with open arms. We know he is grateful to be reinstated, eager to put the past behind him and continue to evolve and grow as a leader. We look forward to having his strong, positive presence back as a teammate, player, and person in our community." So hi, everyone. Welcome to NFL Live. I'm Susie Culber and joined right off the top by our insider, Adam Schefter. Adam, I guess Garrett's meeting with the commissioner went well. What more can you tell us about how this decision to reinstate immediately was made?
Well, Susie, this was always the NFL's plan. When it suspended Myles Garrett, it wanted him to basically be on a timeout, to think about what he had done. But I think the league had no intention of holding him out beyond last season. I think the league felt that his penalty had been served, his time had come up, and I think the league just wanted to hear from him in person on Monday that he understood the severity of his actions, that he had grown from that, learned from that, and would not be doing that again. And once Myles Garrett explained that to Roger Goodell and Troy Vincent on Monday, you see how quickly the NFL handed down its decision to reinstate him less than 48 hours later. So that was the way the league wanted it to go all along, and it followed plan, and Myles Garrett is now eligible to rejoin the Cleveland Browns.
So as we know, players are off right now per CBA. In fact, a lot of coaches are off right now, too. What's a timeline for when Garrett can get back to work with the Browns?
Well, they have their offseason program that begins the first week in April because they have a new head coach in Kevin Stefanski, and this is one less thing he'll have to worry about. So he'll be back with the Browns at that point in time. But for now, Garrett has other plans. He's the captain of the NFL's Water Boys program, which is the program that Chris Long started, and it works to bring clean water to communities in East Africa. And so right now, Susie, Myles Garrett is set to depart on a humanitarian trip next week to Tanzania to help bring clean water to the communities in need there.
Garrett, busy doing important work. Always good to hear. Adam, appreciate the insight. So the NFL set a minimum of a 6-game suspension for Garrett this past season, and they won't go any further than that. His suspension is the second longest ever handed down to a player for an on-field incident in NFL history. Only Vontaze Burfict's was longer. As we say hi to our gang here, Jeff Darlington, Rob Ninkovich, Teddy Bruschi. Teddy, what do you think about the timing of this?
I think if I'm Myles Garrett, I'm thanking my lucky stars that it's over. And it was only 6 games because, you know, you don't know what the word indefinite means anymore. And so I thought that it would go into next season for the commissioner in the league to send a message to the players that that image of him swinging that helmet was unacceptable. So just a little reminder, because we're emotional on defense, and I understand how this can happen. You lose yourself sometimes. So if this something like this were to happen again, then you have something to go back to. But the question I have is, what if this happened in week 4? What if this happened in week 5? Would it have been an 11-game suspension? Would it have been the entire year? So the word indefinite is inconsistent right now, and that's what I'm thinking.
Well, talking to some people around the league, that is what people are questioning as well, because it's not just a matter of the math involved of whether it was week 3 or week 10. Now the NFL has set a precedent that, you know, by all means, it seems like Myles Garrett is a pretty great guy. We hear about his work with, you know, humanitarian aid, but at the same time, now, if you take the helmet off of somebody and use it as a weapon against that person, that's a 6-game suspension. And if you suggest otherwise, you say, well, why did he only get that? So That's where the NFL sort of has to walk a fine line here. They have set a precedent about something that is pretty violent.
Well, I think they got it right in a sense of six games and then the end of the season, and now you go into the offseason with a new coach and you go into offseason workouts and you got training camp. And if this was to go into next season, it would definitely be a story that other people were talking about and the new coach has to deal with. And, you know, I just think that the six games was a fair and reasonable punishment. He wasn't paid for it, and they were a team that needed his production. They needed him on defense. They didn't have him. They had a chance for the playoffs. Didn't happen, but if he was on the team, potentially could have helped them to have that guy on defense. So it definitely hurt the team. I think he understands that it hurt the team. It hurt the logo. It hurt the NFL. Yeah. You know, everyone's seeing that, and I don't know how many times I've seen that replay over and over again.
And pretty much I think they want it to stop.
Yes.
They don't want that image to be played over and over again starting next season. So
that's
a positive for the NFL. I mean, the positive would have been, all right, spend them a couple more games. The players get the message. Oof, that's eight games. That's half a 1 year's salary. That's problems. I get the message. But then in terms of a sort of optics thing, you're not showing this over and over again when you're talking about the Cleveland Browns and you see why Myles Garrett is suspension. So this can be put to bed right now.
I do like the use of the indefinite suspension by the NFL because it allowed everybody who was freaking out at the time, basically saying lifetime ban for this guy, to at least have some time to step back and maybe let rational perspective on the whole thing.
So do players sort of realize now if the word indefinite is put on a suspension?
What does that mean?
Don't do anything that involves an indefinite suspension in the first week of the season. Because then you may be gone the entire year.
That's a good point.
But what does it mean? Do I just have to go to the commissioner and show him I'm doing good and I go through the anger counseling and show him I'm sorry? Is that all I need to do? And the timing of it. So there is some inconsistencies that I wish wasn't there.
All right, so for now at least it's a clean slate for the player, the team, and for the NFL.
Do it. Let's
and the biggest
it.
Headline of this season, of course, 42-year-old Tom Brady, who has spent his entire career with New England, is scheduled to become a free agent for the first time in his career on March 18th. There's been cryptic tweets and social media posts from Brady, but no real indications of whether he's staying in New England or where he might be going. No doubt it's the crew to talk about it. 13 years of Patriot, 8 years of Patriot, tied into
the inner
circle.
On behalf of the 31 other teams, I'd just like to say this is gross.
So what do you know? You've had a lot of intel on Brady. What are you hearing? What are your thoughts?
Look, I mean, I think that I think if we're trying to lay out what to expect from the next 35 to 40 days, we need to think of before March 16th and after March 16th.
Good point.
Because before March 16th is all about Tom Brady trying to figure out if he can make this work with Bill Belichick and come back to the New England Patriots.
And just to clear up, the league year starts the 18th, but the legal tampering period starts on the 16th. So there's a little bit of wiggle room where he could test the market without messing up salary cap and those things with the Patriots.
But that's the thing. It really does mess it up even then, because they're going to have these tough conversations about who's going to be coming in. How much can we collaborate in 2020 together? How much can we get back on the same page? The way I honestly view it is like marriage counseling. These two guys have to get into a room together.
4 years.
And they both have to make some concessions to where they get kind of get the relationship where it needs to be, because quite honestly, I know people want to like tap dance around this. It's not in the place where it needs to be right now to make this work.
Yeah, if it gets close to that tampering period, Tom Brady is not going to be a New England Patriot, because you got to think of the plan that Bill Belichick has. And it's ironic because the one thing that's made them have so much success in these 20 years is the one thing that can end it. And that's the egos, because they've suppressed each other's egos for two decades in terms of, okay, let's work together. Is it finally to the point where I've had enough, this is what I want, and then the other side says, no, this is what I want, then it's okay, see you later. Does it end like that? But Bill has to know, because he will not be left out in the dry at this most important position, because I'm sure he has a contingency plan already. Okay, if I get the answer, you, Tom, would like to test the free agent waters and find out all of these lucrative offers from the Chargers or the Raiders. I got to know then, okay, am I going Mariota? Am I going Cam Newton? Am I going Phillip Rivers? Am I going anywhere? Yeah, do I stick with Stidham? I think they'll want someone else, Susie.
Okay.
They'll want someone else. He's promising, but he's still young. But that's what Bill's thinking. I got to have a plan if it doesn't go my way.
And look, everyone asked me this question. This is the number one question people ask me. Is it Bill or is it Tom? Is it Bill or is it Tom? And I say, it's both. It's both of them, because the success that they've had has been together. So the risk here is if they do part ways and Tom goes somewhere else and he goes 8-8 or 6-10, then all those questions go, oh, well, it was Bill. It was the system. It was all that. But then if he goes out there and he wins, then it's, well, Tom, yeah, like, he's the man. So sometimes it's like two alpha dogs, right? And they're looking at each other. You're like, hey, keep them. Don't get them too close, because sometimes, but then they can get along. But you got to figure out that balance. Like, what's the balance here so they both can get along? And I think a really big issue is for the weapons that they talk of. Like, he needs more weapons. Right. Well, if you sign him to a deal, once he hits the market and people are offering him something 30 plus, because once he is signed, guess what? How many season tickets sales are going to go up and suites and all those things?
The ship sails, though, at that point. And
yeah,
that's the
so then
problem
they got to move on.
Yeah.
And then that cap number is down. Still then you hits. Can go get your weapons, but they don't have quarterback.
And here's another point, too, in terms of the timing of Tom's answer to the organization. What kind of weapons as Bill Belichick, if I'm Bill Belichick, can I bring in if they're asking me who's your quarterback going to be? And
yeah,
I don't
exactly.
know.
Exactly.
Okay, well,
that's
the
why the timing is so awkward.
The quarterback's
here,
not going to be Brady, but here's my plan to bring in someone else. And then, but if you don't have that answer, you know, then I don't even want to go to New England if I'm a number one wideout or a tight end that can help, because I mean, you may be going with an unproven Stidham and you don't even have a plan. So no, I'm going to this other team.
Mike Reese reports there have been no talks, nothing's happening, but the door's always open. That it's
right.
Time to
walk in the
it's
door.
Time.
Okay, and more coming on Brady. We're going to attack this from a couple different angles throughout the show. Right now, another quarterback whose future is also uncertain, Cam Newton in Carolina. After Newton said during Super Bowl week that he absolutely will return to the Carolina Panthers in 2020, Panthers owner David Tepper left some uncertainty Tuesday afternoon.
Listen, I'm not a doctor. You know, and I said it a million times, is he healthy? And how does, I mean, he's not a doctor. So, you know, there's a lot of different things can happen. But first is he healthy? Tell me that, and then we can talk.
Have other teams reached out inquiring about his trade possibility?
You know, I could ask Nicole. She answers the phone in her house, but no, I haven't heard about that.
Jeff, what do you think about the long-term future for Cam in Carolina?
First of all, that was a really weird answer.
Yeah, that's not he's our quarterback.
No, Dave Tepper is not. I don't think many people know Dave Tepper in the NFL circles yet, and you will come to find out this is a very candid man who's going to, he's kind of one of those new money owners who's going to kind of say what he wants to say and do what he wants to do. To a degree, it's refreshing. To another degree, it's like arguably, is he the most important player in the history of the franchise?
You're talking Cam?
Yeah, Cam Newton.
Yes.
Pretty
MVP,
close, right?
Took him to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Sure.
So
sure.
He's kind of talking about him like he's like the kicker, with all due respect to kickers. Like, this is a guy that you're basically saying, we don't know if he's going to be a part of the organization because we're not sure how healthy he is. I understand it. He's facing a very precarious situation with Cam. This just feels to me, those comments, those sentiments do not sound like an organization that is fully behind their quarterback.
It's either he's telling the truth right there and he just wants to put it off because he doesn't know the information, or he's smarter than I think and he's looking long term. Because if you look at what's happening to this Carolina Panther organization, even going back a year ago, such great leadership that's left. All right, Thomas Davis went to the Chargers. Luke Kuechly now is retired. Greg Olsen may not come back. Mm-hmm. Ron Rivera gone. Okay, you can bring in a rookie, Matt Rhule, at head coach. And then maybe it's already in the plans that we let Cam Newton go, because maybe this is a year we just anticipate to struggle. To struggle because right down there in that South Carolina state, there's a player called Trevor Lawrence. And maybe we want to struggle there and then go with these Allen and Greer, these type of quarterbacks, and all of a sudden we see the future. I signed Matt Rhule for a lot of money and a long-term future. We're getting rid of all this leadership. There's time for a reboot. Maybe this is what he's thinking.
It's the reset?
Yeah.
Well, when we look at it this way, you know, Cam Newton is a mobile quarterback, right? With a bad foot, potentially a bad foot, and two throwing shoulder surgeries that he's had in the past. At what point do you look at this and say, he's not a pocket quarterback because he can't just sit in the pocket and make all the throws because he doesn't have the accuracy. And, well, he doesn't run like he used to, because every time he does run, he takes massive hits. You know, you think back on some of those hits that he's taken. He's had concussions. He's broke his foot. He's got shoulder problems. I mean, as he gets older, he cannot take the damage. So he has to rely on his accuracy. If he doesn't have the accuracy, then what is he?
The one thing, though, we should point out here in terms of contractual obligations, they can keep him for relatively cheap. It'll cost him $21 million to have Cam Newton on the field for them next year. That's mid-range for a franchise quarterback. Really, truly a bargain when you're talking about his potential. They can save $19 million, though, if they cut him. So they can cut him also. They basically have their options on the table when it comes to Newton.
And even with Cam, is this a team looking forward that can compete for a championship? I say no. I say no. With all the changes, that a lot of things can happen in an offseason. I understand that. And they will be a solid team with a Cam Newton at quarterback. Maybe squeak out 7 wins. Maybe they grind and they get to 8-8 with a new head coach that has to figure out everything. We saw some of the early struggles of Cliff Kingsbury in terms of the quarterback operation, clapping your hands, and all the things that he's had to learn. And he became a better coach towards the end of the year. Absolutely. Rule may have to go through that, too. I'm just putting two and two together
eight
here.
8-8's not getting you Trevor
And it's
Lawrence.
Not getting you a high draft pick. No. So is there any long-term sort of vision in Carolina? That's what I'd like to know.
Sounds like the offseason in Carolina is a massive rebuild for 2020.
That's really interesting.
That's the storyline. As we continue to follow today's breaking news, Browns defensive end Myles Garrett reinstated by the NFL, effective immediately. Garrett met with NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell on Monday regarding his indefinite suspension stemming from his part in a late-game brawl between the Browns and Steelers last season. As a review, Garrett started his 2019 season on a bad note. He was fined more than $10,000 for punching Delanie Walker in their Week 1 loss to the Titans. And just a week later, Garrett was fined again, this time $42,000 for hits that were deemed unnecessary on quarterback Trevor Siemian. Garrett penalized 4 times in that game. And we know about the Week 11 incident in which Garrett was suspended indefinitely for striking Mason Rudolph on his bare head with the quarterback's own helmet with less than a minute to go in the game. And Lewis Riddick joins us now. Lewis, what's your reaction to the reinstatement immediately?
Yeah, I think I'm not shocked, Susie, only because I think we have seen the fact that the league office, the commissioner, the people who are responsible for player discipline, they take a very subjective, formless type of decision-making process, or rather they engage in a very subjective, formless type of decision-making process when it comes to this type of thing. And a lot of that is dependent upon just how much contrition players show, how much they have done in the meanwhile once the suspension is handed down to kind of show that, look, well, I'm trying to make sure I take the necessary steps to make sure that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. And I think some of the guys there on the panel, I think Jeff in particular, has pointed out the fact that, and Teddy has pointed out the fact that, look, if this was something that had happened earlier in the season where it kind of still burns hot all season long and the NFL is kind of in the dominant news cycle every day when we're talking about sports and there's nothing else and we're right in the thick of the playoff race, there's no way he would have been brought back this soon. So now that things have died down, the Super Bowl is over, we're kind of in that lull in between the Super Bowl and the combine and the draft. I mean, this is something that will probably kind of filter its way through the news cycle very quickly. And next thing you know, nobody cares about what Myles Garrett or the Cleveland Browns are doing. It's just about, hey, let's get on to what's next, which is the combine, the draft, and the new players coming in. So I think a lot of it is just so subjective that sometimes is what confuses people when it comes down to these kind of indefinite suspension scenarios. You just don't know what you're going to get. And it's you don't want to make a joke out of this, but it is funny to say when I think this is Teddy who or somebody there on the panel said, hey, well, if you're going to commit this kind of thing during the season, I guess you better do it later in the season than early in the season, because if you do it early in the season, you can bet that you're probably not going to be brought back. You just don't want that kind of thing. They need to really come up with some standards as far as these kinds of things so it doesn't seem so arbitrary. And I know the commissioner is trying to do the right thing, and I do believe in second chances. And I think as I get older, I'm more and more a believer in second chances and the ability for people to grow. You just would like it for it to be a little bit more uniform so people know what to expect if they ever do this kind of thing in the future.
Yep, uniform, key word there. All right, thank you, Lewis. Lewis Riddick with his perspective. So you have a first-year head coach and a first-year GM. How can you use this to help your team progress?
Well, you got to try and move on from it, really. You can't look back to last year because it wasn't a successful year. And we all have seen last year with the Browns, all the talent, all the hype going into that season. And what happened? A failed season, another failed season. And I had said this before the season started. They needed somebody that could manage characters, manage the personalities in the locker room, because you have the talent. Look, every NFL team has a lot of talent. They have a lot of talent. But you have to manage that talent, manage the expectations to where they go out there and every single day they're just working to be a team and not an individual person trying to make a contract or have a lot of Instagram likes or have all these different things that are distracting. So a new coach, new GM, they have to have a common goal. Let's bring everyone together because we all need to right the ship together. It can't just be one guy. It can't be the offense. Can't be the defense. It's got to be everybody together, working together.
Kevin Stefanski, who learned a lot under Mike Zimmer with the Vikings, I think comes into a situation where he understands the way Zimmer did it. And not to pile on Freddie Kitchens, but to that point, it felt a lot like last year that you had sort of a guy who was this player's coach. And that's
having
just fun. Not going to work in that kind of locker room.
Having a good time.
And it feels like it's going to work at the beginning of the year. It just never, I just never remember that ever working at the end of the year.
Yeah, and Zim is a coach that didn't mess around.
He did not.
I mean, and hopefully Stefanski has that, because his biggest asset with this team this year, I don't think it's going to be his knowledge of offense, defense, or special teams. It'll be how he manages
these personalities.
Because the fact that it's, like we said, it's good for the NFL that this image isn't there anymore for next year, but it's also good for the Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
So they can start from scratch, and Stefanski doesn't even have to worry about this. But I argue that part of the reason Myles Garrett had all those problems was because Kitchens couldn't set the precedent of consequences.
Yeah.
I remember playing for Belichick when I'd lose control on the field and I want to just knock somebody out. Right when you go like this, you understand, and something comes in your head about things that have been told to you about the accountability that will be held upon you if something happens on the field of something that isn't football related, and then you stop. So Myles Garrett punching somebody, getting roughing the passer penalties, and then finally the helmet swing. You see how it escalated to where it wasn't dealt with properly. Can Stefanski do that? I don't even want to know what kind of offense you're running right now, man. Can you handle not only him, but Beckham and Baker, all of these personalities? That's how his success will be measured
by
me.
Fourth most penalized team. Undisciplined.
Discipline. They need discipline. And yeah. I couldn't even imagine coming off the field I couldn't imagine yelling at the head coach. I couldn't imagine that. I could not imagine that, because I guess what? I'd have a ticket out of town the next day. I'd be out of there. So it's the accountability and it's understanding. Look, we need to be disciplined, and you have to respect. You have to have a respect for your coach. If you have no respect, you walk off the field, you throw your helmet, you yell at your coach, you yell at your coordinator. That's not respecting your coaches. You got to have a respect, and that's all earned. And it all happens in offseason and training camp and OTAs. That's when you have to build all that.
Hopefully learn from Zim, because Zim was – there was one game. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, that he wanted to run the ball. And then, they didn't run the ball.
And that was it.
It was the Monday night football game.
And that was it. Right. So hopefully he brings that to Cleveland.
Yep.
All right, let's try a little 6 degrees of separation, just because we're in the AFC North. Antonio Brown's apology tour continued Wednesday morning with an Instagram post directed at Ben Roethlisberger. The former Steelers receiver posted a photo of the two along with the caption, "Mostly you, a little bit of me. Yee-hee. I never realized how good I had it. Got caught up in my emotion with everyone coming after me. I really apologize for my actions. Sincerely, man. It's never been another connection like what we've done in the past decade. I appreciate you. Sincerely, AB." Do you think the apologies eventually land him back in the league?
That's not what's going to land him back.
You got to see how this one ages, because usually there's something following up within the next couple days with this. And then even the way it starts with the little bit, how it's sort of just comical about mostly you and a little bit me. It's just
not a joke.
It's just a lot with Antonio Brown, and maybe it's just a little bit too late. Do I still think he may still get a chance in the league? I actually do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I think his fastest way back in the league, quite honestly, is deleting all of his social media.
Not having anything.
Yeah,
because every time he does something, he posts something, you're like, what is he thinking? What is he doing? And his stories, he doesn't realize that his stories, everyone just takes them and saves them and then shares them with everybody else. And you realize the up and down, the roller coaster, the up and down. Because like you said, Teddy, it could be, I'm sorry. And then a week later he finds out, oh, well, this is my investigation is not going as long as I wanted. And then he sends something out that is just ridiculous and goes the opposite way of saying he's sorry. So, you know, it goes back to the old saying, like, if you say you're sorry, you don't never put a but behind it. You never try and explain yourself.
Yeah,
because if you say you're sorry, but you try to explain yourself, then what are you trying to do? You're not really sorry.
So he has the support of a lot of people in the league. Tom Brady, for one, is a guy who continues to support Antonio Brown. He has people who, if he can get on the right path and not make it a daily occurrence about us talking about an apology and an overreaction, an apology, there are people in his corner. A guy like Tom Brady.
You see,
right, but think about teams, you know, we link Brady to the Raiders. That's not happening again. The Patriots, that's not happening again.
You're right.
Maybe the Chargers, you know, the opportunities are dwindling.
And that's a great point. And it's got to be more than just saying that he's still got a relationship with Tom Brady. He's got to live the right life for a little bit. It's not going to take that long for him to eventually...
Right.
Draw
sustain
in this
just in this show. In this show, there's been Miles Garrett and Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
Miles Garrett has handled it the right way. He went through all the, in terms of getting back into the league, showing the league that he has done, you know, whatever counseling he's had to do, showing he's apologetic, those type of things in the right way, to where they sat with him and went, yeah, we believe you. Get back in the league. And then there's Antonio Brown, who up and down like this through social media, the league just knows. Man, I don't know who would want to touch him.
It's such a painful topic, though, because it feels like it almost feels out of his control, like he needs help.
And at the same time,
definitely,
I'd like to see him play football.
Yeah. Yes.
Because he's a talent. Because
so
he's a talent.
Talent.
Yes. So much talent.
So much talent. He needs to learn the word contrite. Let's talk AFC East. Patriots are the big question as we patiently wait to see what happens with TB12. The Bills will work to win a division title for the first time since 1995. The Jets assess the Le'Veon Bell situation, and the Dolphins get a plan together for their three first-round picks, including number 5 overall. So let's dig into the AFC East. Besides Brady, what's the big question for the
besides
Patriots?
Brady?
Other than that,
besides Brady, it would have to be kind of what has said that Brady wanted was some more weapons. And you look, not having Gronk last year, that hurt them. They don't have a tight end. You know, Julian, obviously the go-to guy in the slot, but he's going to be 34 years old. How much more damage can he take to be the guy on every single play that you know the ball's going to? So they're going to have more weapons offensively, and that's going to be tough. If Tom does come back, at what price, and what is that going to do affecting the salary cap? Because defensively, they have Kyle Vannoy up. They have
McCourty.
Dev's up too. That's going to be huge. They're going to have to figure out, you know, Hightower situation.
Yep.
Do they bring him back at a high number?
If Tom doesn't come back, I can anticipate major offensive
huge
changes in terms of, all right, Bill, you saw the graphic, oldest average roster. All right, I'm done with that. We're going young. I see what all these young quarterbacks are doing. Do I sign a Mariota? Do I have two different quarterbacks, packages, things like that? Let's do all the things I felt. Me, Bill Belichick, felt like we couldn't do with a 43-year-old quarterback. And in Tom Brady's mind, he can do it all, and he wants it all to be called. But then you got the other guy thinking, I would just want to scrap it, start all over, start doing these creative things, Taysom Hill-like in New Orleans, all of his offensive ideas that he thinks he's been held back from, he can do, and you may see.
What about the Bills? You know, made the playoffs, young quarterback. Mm-hmm. Looks like they're really taking steps.
And McDermott, the culture that he's establishing now, I'm very excited about. But a little bit of that is going away. Lorenzo Alexander is retired, you know. Right. So he was like, and then it was Kyle Williams before. So you're losing some of those starters that laid that foundation. Can Tremaine Edmonds be that guy? Matt Milano is a linebacker that I really appreciated. A very underrated linebacker. Those type of younger players have to get going. I mean, you can easily want offensive linemen for Josh Allen, type of things.
They were such a hungry team, which is a beautiful thing, but they were also at times a sloppy team in that regard. They played like dogs, and I think that's a really good quality. This next year, they sort of have to go from sort of freshman or sophomore to sort of maybe upperclassmen and start playing with a little more.
And those younger players that I mentioned now have to fill the roles.
Time to step up.
Even if Gore, if he's not there.
They're close.
You know, those type of guys.
Josh Allen has to step up, because in that playoff game, he threw that thing away. They had that game in hand to win it, and he didn't have it at the end of the game. So if they want to win the division, yeah, he's got to play better.
I feel like he's capable.
He's capable. Really,
Jeff,
he's
Dolphins, do it. Three first-round picks. Dolphins, are they ready to move?
Well, this is what's so fascinating about the Dolphins. You talk about the three first-round picks and the plethora that comes after that, and you would think that they could walk away with a number of starters out of this. The question, though, becomes, did they put themselves out of the quarterback hunt? Because all of a sudden, that number three spot that is being held by the Lions right now becomes the pressure point for other teams to move up. Do the Chargers, now that they don't have Phillip Rivers and want a more mobile quarterback, do everything to move into three to get Tua? And if that's the case, and the Dolphins decide they need to move into that spot, they're going to have to mortgage a lot of what they acquired in terms of the three picks in the first round, basically the rest of it, to get to that spot. And that's what the Dolphins ultimately have to decide in the coming couple months, is whether they want to put it all on the line. Go for that quarterback now?
They're going to have to go for a quarterback, because the offensive coordinator and the starting quarterback are a combined 105 years old. So, seriously, they're 105. So if you want to get younger,
together in the Ice Age, I think.
This league is about youth and being young and fast, and we've seen the quarterback position has changed. Fitzmagic is great. I think he's a good quarterback, but he's older.
He'll
and they need to find
bridge.
A guy. A young guy to come in.
If things work out for them, though, and they're able to get Tua, I mean, it could, with Fitzpatrick, do you still have the redshirt year for Tua? Because it's just...
With the hip injuries,
there's
well,
just so
too.
Many questions. There's so many questions with him in terms of health, and maybe you don't want to rush it, but with multiple picks, it gives you that luxury, and B-Flo wants to bring as many good football players in there as he would like, and I know he doesn't want a package to move up a couple spots to get him, so hopefully just good fortune goes your way and you get him.
The only thing I'll say about the Dolphins' draft prospects is I always look at, like, all of the best quarterbacks in the league right now. We're all taking, like, Patrick Mahomes was 10th overall. The rest of the guys were barely first-rounders. So you don't necessarily need to mortgage everything to move up to get that guy. You can find him somewhere. There will be a quarterback in this draft that we're not talking about who will be a franchise guy for the next decade.
The draft picks plus salary cap.
Knowing who that's going to be is the hard question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They got
a little bit of luck. How about the Jets, dead last in the division?
So the Jets, to me, you know,
years.
When I was a kid, I used to love magnets, right? And you take the magnet and you turn it around and they just never go together. You flip it around and then bang, they go together. That's what I think the Jets right now, they need to all come together, because you can't have your head coach, you know, not liking the addition of Bell, you know, paying him the money that they paid him and then having a comment about that, because then it just puts a divide, you know, with your team. And, you know, they have a young quarterback who's going into his fourth year. And I think he's got potential. Darnold's got potential to be very, very good, but he needs consistency. You need somebody that's going to be there. You can't have a new coordinator, a new head coach every other year. So Gase is going to have to get some work done, and they're going to have to come together
so
here and
Joe
do
Douglas.
Something.
I mean, that's kind of, this is his first offseason. This is Adam Gase and him together really spending the whole time putting these pieces together, and they swear that that's what it's going to take. So
offensive line, guys, got to be a high priority for these guys to protect that quarterback. Just has to be.
There is some continuity within the division with a lot of change around the league. Only the Dolphins change coordinators.
Oh, yeah.
So at least going
Maybe
into the
could,
season,
you know, another
there
year,
is some.
Put it together.
We'll see.
We'll see.
This is Point Blank. So I'm going to lay out a scenario for Tom Brady, and then you guys have to fill in the blank.
Okay.
You're up first.
All right, here we go.
All right, first one.
Ready? Let's see.
The one team Tom Brady would leave New England for is the...
Let's go. Ready?
Ready.
Vegas.
Vegas, baby.
Vegas, baby.
Vegas.
So think about this. Does the Tuck rule, does it start way back when and come all the way back to Gruden on the Tuck rule? Does he come back to it? You know, look, I think that if they sign him, it would be just a complete frenzy of people trying to get Brady jerseys, tickets to this game, because that's a destination. Everyone wants to go to Vegas, baby. Come on. So, you know, for me, if he goes to Vegas, you're going to see me in black and gold 12, baby.
I'll be and Gruden would believe that it would be full circle.
Full circle.
Every time I see Gruden, said, Bruschi, you owe me a Super Bowl because of that Tuck rule.
Well, he wants one.
In all seriousness, though, when we talk about potential landing spots, one important thing to Brady will be the ability to collaborate and to have some creative input with his head coach. John Gruden will embrace that with Brady. That, to me, is why this does make quite a bit of sense.
Let's try another one. This one for you.
Okay.
Tom Brady.
Oh, yep. Hold on.
Tom Brady to the Cowboys would be?
Tom Brady to the Cowboys would be insane. And I say that because that would mean Jerry Jones would say goodbye to a great quarterback in Dak Prescott. And I don't know how that would be, how it happened, because in worst case scenario, I mean, I'm franchising Dak. Hopefully you get the deal done. Dak wants big numbers, but you got to think of the next decade. And I know, love Tom as a QB. He doesn't have 10 years. Two, maybe three. All right, he'd be a quick little fix. Maybe you squeeze a championship out of it, but that would mean your long-term future with Dak Prescott would be gone, and I think it'd be insane.
It's insanely fun. I love it.
That's
I think it's so fun.
Yeah, with that star on his helmet.
Marketing.
I don't know.
Jeff? Finally, right. Tom Brady retiring would be.
It's too long of a word to write the whole thing, but incomprehensible.
This
is pressure belling.
It would be sad. Look, everything about what Tom is trying to do is to prove that he is capable of longevity. The TB12 method is all about it. He is not ready to retire. He will go somewhere, and there are teams that want him. It would be in just make sure they get you by the word. That's this guy right here.
Hey, I wasn't good at spelling, so I'm not getting involved.
Let's talk NFC East. The Eagles will look to help Carson Wentz as he became the first 4,000-yard passer in NFL history without a wide receiver gaining 500 yards. And in Dallas, Mike McCarthy takes over the NFL's top offense in terms of yards from last season. So let's approach this with some major headlines, starting with the Cowboys. And the headline here is, are Dak Prescott and Mike McCarthy a Super Bowl combo? So, Rob, what do you think? Will the McCarthy-Dak relationship work?
Yeah, I definitely think it will. Look, McCarthy's had a lot of experience, and he's been with Rodgers, one of the best of all time. So, you know, you saw the passion that he has for the game in his interview. He said, I'm sick of coaching my daughter's volleyball. I just want to be out here coaching football. So I think it's a breath of fresh air for him, knowing that he is the head coach again in the National Football League for the Dallas Cowboys, you know, America's team, one of the best teams to be a head coach for. So I think he's excited for it. And Dak has so much potential right now. Yes, he's young. He led the NFL in passing. Such a young talent that if they get together on a contract and he's the head coach and he's their starting quarterback, I think that there's a lot of potential for success. Future Super Bowls, we don't know, but McCarthy's a great head coach.
Yeah, I'll just go to the other side of the ball, and the linebacker duo that I was so excited to watch last year was Van Der Esch and Smith. Yeah. They were supposed to be one of the best in the game. But Leighton Van Der Esch, of course, has injuries again. Sean Lee comes in and plays, you know, formidable for a few games. But is he going to be back? Because the depth at that linebacker position, because you don't know about Leighton Van Der Esch, you just don't want to mess with the neck. You never know how well that's going to be for them. So I'll be watching those linebackers, too.
Okay, let's move on to the Giants. The headline here reads, Boys to G-Men, Giants hire former Dallas coach Garrett as offensive coordinator. How do we see this working out for Daniel Jones?
I actually like that pick. You know, Joe Judge bringing in somebody with head coaching experience that's been in the NFL for a very, very, very long time. It just helps him because you can, you know, Joe Judge just bounce questions off of him. Oh, hey, this situation, I've never been a head coach for. You have. Can you, you know, what would you do working through this situation? And having a young quarterback like Daniel Jones, you know, so impressionable now that he's so young, going into his second year. I think that that's going to be a good relationship because Garrett, you know, think about his personality. He's not, you know, going to get in your face and going to be crazy. He's going to coach you.
And Judge will.
Judge will. So it's a good balance.
I always like seeing these young or these head coaches that don't have much experience going out and having enough self-worth and self-value in themselves to hire someone like – it's like Sean McVay when he hired Wade Phillips. It's like have enough commitment to yourself. You can hire that, bring that guy in. And
it's a win-win.
Allow him to be successful for it.
It's a win-win.
I'd like to see Judge, I mean, make sure they know who the head coach is still, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to have that coordinator that just goes off on his own. This is mine. Leave me alone. I got it. Judge is the type of guy that's going to micromanage everybody and get everybody on the same page.
Okay. Now to the Eagles. Major changes coming for Eagles as they usher in youth movement. Is Carson Wentz's health a concern? And obviously, what do they need to do around him?
Can we get a receiver? I mean, I think that's obvious in terms of towards the end of the year. I mean, of course, with the DeSean Jackson injury, and he wasn't there for most of the year. Explosive start, but, you know, sort of a tease with that type of deep threat. You know, supposedly a deep wide receiver draft, so bringing in help, going over to the defensive side of the ball, the corners, Darby and Mills, are they going to come back? So, I mean, so many things they can address. They do have some, I mean, they still grinded this year and got that playoff berth, but still, Carson did everything he can with the limited amount of resources, so to get him something, especially at the receiver position.
And I hate when people say, oh, he's injury prone, because if you go out there and you get hit by anybody like he did, you're going to have a concussion, you're going to have to leave the football game. So I don't think he's injury prone. I think he's a great quarterback for the organization. He's going to be their guy. So hopefully, because football, it's just one foot there, one foot the other. You know, you get injured, you tear an ACL, it's just rolling the dice. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this year he gets a fair shake at it and he doesn't have to deal with those injuries. But we all know it's physical, it's tough, and it's hard to get through a season.
Hey, rounding out the NFC East with another new head coach, Vikings VP says all eyes will be on work in progress Dwayne Haskins. Jeff, what's it going to take for, you know, the head coach and the quarterback and making this work?
It's funny, you know, you call him a new head coach. He is a new head coach, but this is one of the most veteran head coaches in the NFL. And I think that what we maybe forget about Ron Rivera as he enters this situation with Dwayne Haskins is that he helped manage Cam Newton over the past decade better than I can imagine anybody doing that. Rivera is so good at being sort of flexible and moldable to whatever challenges he faced. We talk about a guy being sort of a leader as a head coach. We know that Ron Rivera is brilliant as a defensive mind, but he also is a leader of men. And I think that's really going to help Dwayne Haskins become a man. And I actually really like that.
And you talk about that leadership aspect of Rivera. And what was the big thing for me that really, you know, made me down on the Washington Redskins organization was the whole Trent Williams saga, tackle. I mean, I had this growth on my head. They didn't care. They just got rid of me. And it turned out being a major medical problem for him. Is Rivera able to talk to Williams
if they've talked,
there's a sign right there. We want to get you back in. Things are changing here now, Trent. I'm going to get this fixed. This guy's fired. The training staff's gone. Bring you in. It's going to be right. That'd be a huge sign. And to help out Haskins, too, you got your left tackle back. Starting there would be a huge sign for a head coach reflecting that leadership that he has.
Yeah, and it's you think of the Redskins right now, back when the Redskins were the Redskins and they were loading the stadium up. Now I think the XFL has more people in attendance than the Redskins do. So it was interesting that Rivera wanted to go to that team because he talked about the history. He said that in his interview. Look, they had so much history here with the Redskins. I want to bring it back. So it'll be interesting to see how he moves forward with the quarterback position, because right now I'm not completely sold on him, and he is a young quarterback, so they got to figure out, okay, what are we going to do in this position, because it's so vital. We all know that.
I just hope Ron Rivera can do what he wants and doesn't have anybody in his ear telling him otherwise.
Well,
you know,
the guy, maybe he went there and clarified that. Maybe that's
it sounds clarification. Like, we talked to him at the Super Bowl. It sounds like they're moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
We'll see. For our finale.
Hey!
Put Darlington over there.
since Teddy was a Patriot for 13 years and Rob for 8, we're going to see who knows their Patriots best. So I'm going to read the question.
This is different time zones here. Like,
Whoever hits the buzzer first, Jeff will determine and you get to answer.
Okay.
Here we go. First question. Tom Brady holds the franchise record for the longest passing touchdown, a 99-yarder.
Wes Welker.
Wow.
Which season?
2011.
It was in Miami.
Is that
which
West
season?
Walker, 2011.
And the answer is yes.
So what do you do?
You are correct.
Well, you got half a point each.
West Welker.
You each get a half. Give him half a point.
Half
West
point.
Walker. Okay. In 2011, I guess.
I think it was first, but he didn't know the year.
I had 2 picks in this game.
Yeah.
No, it's
not,
who broke the buzzer first.
Not my own horn.
Got to know the year.
Ready for number two?
Okay, got to know the year.
Yes.
The Patriots have selected one linebacker.
Bam!
In the
one linebacker in the top 10 of the NFL draft. Young man from the University of Tennessee, Jerod Mayo.
Mayo!
Wow.
That's it. Mayo.
Point for Teddy.
That was
1.
Teddy's 5. Last
that was
season.
It.
I should have known that one, man.
I knew.
Mayo's rookie
I was thinking, there it is.
My rookie year, yes.
That's when I know.
This is when I know I was like, the clock is ticking. The clock is ticking on my time. It's about time to retire.
When they
drafted Gerard.
Eyes over here.
Ready?
Okay, eyes over here.
Number three.
Oh, he looked at the thing.
He did.
Who has the longest interception return for a touchdown in the Brady era?
Against Brady?
The longest interception return for a touchdown in the Brady era.
Like, I don't know this one.
No? You should know this, too. This is your era.
It is a Patriot
is
player.
I study a lot as an analyst, and the answer is Darius. And the answer is Darius
it's
Butler.
It's a Patriot.
He got it. You Googled
Darius Butler? No, he got the answers.
Cheated.
He's got
There's
the answers,
no way.
I'm telling you.
There's no way
it's my job to know these things, people.
Oh, my.
2009.
It is incomprehensible
Rob,
that you
team.
Knew all those.
You were on the team.
I didn't know that one, I swear.
You were
I
on the team,
one.
Man. You cheated.
All
There's
right.
no way I could have cheated. Well, these are new questions.
You know what's crazy is I heard someone say, oh, I emailed you the answers earlier.
Do we have any bonus questions? Okay.
Oh, bonus question.
Longest question. Career rush for Brady.
I don't know this one either.
Knows this, he cheated.
He's got the answers. If you know this.
I was here. I was there.
You were there.
It was 2006.
And?
The team was...
This is such a lie.
I can't remember the team.
He's not a good actor.
I can't remember
you.
The team.
How long was it?
How long? How many yards?
20 yards. I'll give him 20
right?
yards.
22 yards.
22 yards. Was it 2006?
Yes.
Thank
Stop.
You.
Okay.
Yes. Somebody call Ted Wells.
Give me another one.
There's an insider on this.
Most sacks by a Patriots player.
Most sacks by in a game? Like three in a game?
And is this in a game? All time.
That would be Andre Tippett.
That's Andre Tippett.
That'd be Andre Tippett. Yes. Career.
Right. Who's
Andre
second?
Tippett. Most Patriots career playoff sacks by who?
McGinnis.
Willie McGinnis. Yes.
Yeah.
Most
sacks
you've
answer.
Had in a game.
In a game? Three. Yeah.
Did another 50 also have sacks in a game?
Vrabel.
Yes.
Yeah.
He had three also.
Yeah,
this is actually
well.
Impressive.
Most sacks by a rookie in a Super Bowl by the New England Patriots.
Wait, Teddy's asking the questions
rookie,
now?
He's just making
rookie.
Them up. This is unbelievable.
Rookie.
1996, number 54.
Really?
That would be me.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Three sacks. Three sacks. Yeah, three sacks.
That's
man.
Nice.
Okay.
Were they like, give me sacks, or like, you beat a guy? Or is it like...
I was a defensive tackle and a pass rushing tackle. They called it cactus.
Was it a grab?
They actually called it cactus because I went to the University of Arizona.
That was your call.
Yes.
They were trying to pump you up.
Yes.
Go,
yes.
One more. Come on, one more question.
You got any questions for me?
I'm not good at just instant questions off the top of my head.
Okay.
Other quarterback besides Tom Brady to lead their team to victory. Another quarterback.
Besides
2008.
Garoppolo.
2008.
Besides Garoppolo, Brissett, and Castle.
There you go.
That's pretty much all of them.
That's it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. All right.
Brissett and Castle.
You know how we have to end the show, right?
Yes.
You do know. You do know how we're going to end the show.
It's incomprehensible.
Can we flash back to earlier in the show?
I was thinking about
incomprehensible.
What happened here was
sad.
I was trying to decide whether it was an S or a C, and I forgot to think about the H. I got ahead of myself.
Next time we'll use emojis, it will not be a problem.
We just won't do a spelling bee.
We could queue up the touchscreen again and
actually you redeem you. You want to redeem yourself on the touch.
The fact that two former players were the ones who called
can
out
you use it in
well, you
sentence?
See my word was only three letters. Hmm.
Derived from the word.
I'm embarrassed, ashamed.
That'll do it, Rod.
I have more patience tomorrow.
Don't
okay, no, we're good.
Do you want any more questions?
No more questions, please.
Okay, none.
I'm
all
done
right,
with
good.
School.